You're listening to WORT 89.9 FM Madison and WORTFM.org, listener-sponsored community radio. Support for this program is provided by WORT's listener sponsors and the International Brotherhood of Electrical Workers Local 2304. Local 2304 is a small local union with a big agenda, bringing power to the people by representing the workers who provide safe and reliable gas and electric service at MG&E. The professional union reps at Madison Teachers Incorporated, the field organizers and canvassers at For Our Future, and the staff collective right here at WORT. More information about the union is available on their website at ibew2304.com.
Hello, I'm Roisin Hasty with the BBC News. Burmese rebels say they've launched a mass drone attack on the capital Naypyidaw, targeting the main military headquarters and the Air Force base. The National Unity Government, which represents the elected administration overthrown in a coup 3 years ago, said it ordered the attack, which involved nearly 30 drones. Jonathan Head reports from neighbouring Thailand.
This was a bold, though largely symbolic, attack by the opposition on the Myanmar capital. There are no reports of significant damage, and the military says it was able to shoot down 7 of the drones. But the main airport in Naypyidaw had to be closed after one drone dropped a bomb close to a runway. Naypyidaw is in many ways like a giant base, designed and built by a previous regime to be a fortress against any popular uprising. This coordinated drone attack is intended to show the military that it is vulnerable even inside its own citadel.
The former Speaker of the South African Parliament, Nosiviwe Mapisa Ngakula, has appeared in court in Pretoria charged with corruption and money laundering, which she denies. She's been released on bail from Johannesburg. Here's Jenny Hill.
Ms. Mapisa Ngakula has been at the heart of a political storm since investigators raided her home 2 weeks ago. A senior figure in the governing ANC party, she's accused of soliciting bribes during her time as defence minister. After resisting calls to resign, she finally capitulated last night, but insisted the move was in no way an admission of guilt. The case is, at best, embarrassing, at worst, deeply damaging to the ANC.
Japan's governing party is punishing 39 members for a political funding scandal that's helped send the government's approval ratings to near record low levels. Members had failed to properly declare hundreds of thousands of dollars of political funds, William Leonardo reports.
Japan's embattled Liberal Democrats will be hoping these measures draw a line under a damaging scandal that's shaken the foundations of one of the world's most successful political parties. Among the 39 members being sanctioned, two influential figures have been urged to leave the party altogether. Two others will lose membership for a year. The political fundraising in question centred around the party's powerful factions. With the LDP rarely losing elections in Japan since the Second World War, these factions have had an outsized influence on who takes power. Three, including one linked to the former Prime Minister Shinzo Abe, have now dissolved. The crisis has harmed faith in the government of Fumio Kishida, who today apologised for causing serious political mistrust.
South Korea's government has ruled that a transgender soldier who killed herself after being forcibly discharged from the military should be classified as having died in the line of duty. The new designation paves the way for Byung-hee Soo to be buried in the South Korea's National Cemetery. World News from the BBC.
Thank you. Good morning. It's 8:05 and you are tuned into WORT 89.9 FM in Madison, Wisconsin. My name is Tony Castaneda and it's time for the Thursday, April 4th, 2024 edition of the 8 o'clock buzz. Good morning, Eli.
Good morning, Tony. How you doing, man?
I'm doing all right. You're on a different mic, man. So yeah, let's get that right.
I hope I didn't screw with you too bad.
It did. Yeah.
I know some buzzes out there looking for engineers to handle complicated mic switches and stuff like this, but I know you can handle it, no problem.
What are you talking about? Oh, wait, I forgot to play this cart.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
Play it real quick.
I forgot. I like to play my carts at the beginning of the show just to get them out of the way, but I forgot to play this one, so I better play it.
Yeah.
You wake up to the 8 o'clock buzz to get the week started.
Not me.
Now, we need the help of a good volunteer to run our on-air operations each Monday.
Oh. Sure, that we should means have one waking of those, right? up a oh, little earlier.
What? Turn that stupid alarm off, man.
7:30.
But that's why WORT has coffee.
Can you hear so this?
That you is there coffee
start
here?
Your week
here?
Off right.
Yeah, can you hear it?
WORT is recruiting a volunteer really? To run no, the soundboard each week on Monday mornings
yeah.
from
no.
7:30 to Put 9 a.m.
You'd run all on-air operations for our morning
coffee.
Program,
Mary
the 8 o'clock buzz
is it?
With Brian Standing.
I didn't
no
see
experience
coffee,
is necessary, but a familiarity with computers
a
and
what?
A strong sense of punctuality and reliability are preferred.
For details. Call 608-256-2001 and ask to speak with Shali Pittman.
Or head online to WORTFM.org.
It's real easy, Eli. You're looking for a job?
Volunteer.
I wonder how much they pay.
Volunteer application.
Hopefully more than two bananas. I tell you, Tony, they give me two bananas, I'll quit.
Two bananas, man. It's a hey, that, the Monday Buzz looking for somebody to run their board. I don't know why they just don't do it themselves like me.
Yeah.
I've been doing it. Speaking of your pay, because I don't want you to switch over to Mondays, man.
Hey, you got to keep it coming.
You don't know how to run this board anyway.
This is...
I got your newspaper.
Good. This is a free market, Tony. Whoever gives me the most bananas, whoever gives me the most newspapers, that's who all engineers
I'm only
for.
Giving you one banana. Shit, dude. Look at this. Zucchini bread.
Good stuff.
Price of everything has gone up, man. It was like... Just since last week.
Society, man.
Well, anyhow, yeah. Brian's been looking for an engineer for his show for a while there. What's going on?
I don't know.
It's a couple of years he's been looking for one.
It's a lot of fun if you're out there.
Anyone can do it.
Anyone can do it.
Because I do it.
Tony does it with his eyes closed.
I've trained you, yeah, all the time, and everybody can tell that. Yeah. Everybody can see this show is so well produced. I got your newspaper here, too.
Oh,
it's
cool.
Part of your pay.
It's good. I got to
figure
out.
This is still the Wisconsin State Journal, but I want to show you something that you probably never saw. See this paper here? It's the New York Times. This is
okay.
from New York. They make newspapers in other places other than Madison.
So is that like a new little upstart paper?
Yeah, it is.
It's like it's a new thing that they're, I guess, New York.
It's all the news that's fit to print is what they say. But actually,
so
there's...
New York, it's New York's trying to be a little bit like Wisconsin by also having a newspaper.
It's yeah, and it's a little thicker also. And the type is like smaller than a Wisconsin State Journal type also. They actually have like these guys called reporters that actually go out and they investigate news stories and they write about them. So there's like sometimes there's an analysis.
That
Madison newspaper. I don't know. They copy a lot of articles from other places, unless it's local stories like man dies from engineering Monday Buzz show or something like that by getting electrocuted.
Dog bit by man, something like that.
Yes, yes. So that's it. All right, man. You're paid now. You okay? You're going to leave
good.
The show?
I'm learning about the apocalypse. Not the apocalypse, the eclipse. I guess it could be the apocalypse.
It's coming. A lot of people are trying to go see the eclipse, as a matter of fact.
Yeah, that's where Mary Lou is.
Oh, yes. That's right. Nobody's here to answer phones.
No one's here answering phones.
So don't call us, anybody. No complaints today. Do you know anybody who's going to see the eclipse? I know several people that are going, and because they're leaving, I have to do their work for them.
Well, my parents' house is in the 100% totality zone, so they're...
eclipse party at Eli's
eclipse
house.
Party, go down to my parents' house.
Really?
Yeah, so everybody can show up and hang out. And
can they go in the basement and drink beer like you used to?
Yeah, I can, but you miss the eclipse if you do that.
Well, you're not supposed to look at it anyhow. So what's going on, right? You're going to blind yourself?
Yeah.
Is this? Can you look at this eclipse? I mean, with your naked eye or what?
Only if you're the president of the United States. That's the only.
The
way.
Former president.
Yeah.
No, really. Okay.
You can't. You'll go blind. Go. I heard there's a couple places around town giving away free eclipse glasses that you can go find. I don't know any off the top of my head, but
I heard everything's changing because it's going to be real cloudy across the whole country.
So no one's going to actually see anything.
When is it anyhow?
Monday.
Really?
Yeah, it'll be like Monday, like 3 o'clock, something like that.
Oh wow.
Yeah. So
looks like Brian's going to have to wait another Monday at least before he gets an engineer.
Yeah, because everybody will be
watching the eclipse.
Yeah.
And what time is the eclipse? Do you know?
You know, in Cincinnati, when I Googled it, it's like at 3:52 or something like that. So I don't know what time it'll be happening here.
A.M. or?
P.M.
It happens at night. Maybe you can't see it anyhow.
Yeah, it's a full eclipse. It happens at midnight. It actually,
it's
weirdly
get
enough,
real dark.
Weirdly enough, it gets real light. It's the opposite.
Wow.
The sun comes out at 12:02 p.m.
I don't get it. What's the big deal?
Yeah.
Anyhow, we do have a show today, everyone. By the way, you are tuned in to WRT. We already said that. Well, we're going to be there's politics going on, political happenings up there in Columbus, Wisconsin, not too far from here, about 30 miles away.
Oh, no kidding. Ben, who's coming on, is from Columbus.
No way.
Yeah.
He's coming on later.
He's coming on later.
Well, why don't you talk about him first?
Yeah. Well, so Ben's a comedian here in Madison.
He doesn't have a last name.
He doesn't. Ben O'Connell.
Okay.
He's from Columbus, Wisconsin. He just actually did a very funny video. I don't know if you saw this. Columbus, Wisconsin was voted the cleanest, the best tasting drinking water in America.
Really?
So he did a fun little video on that. And then he's producing a brand new show here in Madison, Wisconsin. It's going to be a lot of fun. So
it's all about Columbus. Because and we're also going to be speaking with... Jesse Pica-Holst, who's he's kind of like a preservation guy, and he's talking about some property up there in Columbus, Wisconsin that they were trying to preserve, and then the mayor or somebody from the city council trying to sell it from under them to developers.
Oh, man.
But they're going to develop. It's going to be a clean water facility.
Yeah, it's going to the water can only, we can make the water taste better, I promise.
So, yeah, that's interesting. Right. But next week, there's a series of events going on commemorating veterans and whatever. And there's a film fest. Of course, we got the Wisconsin Film Fest this weekend and some of next. But there's going to be a mini veterans film fest. And we're going to be speaking with documentary filmmaker Glenn Silber, who did the War at Home, which is celebrating, I believe, 45 years now. Wow, it's been a while. We'll be speaking with him also later on in the show. And that's all I got. What about you, man?
Yeah. Well, I don't know if you've heard, but the views and opinions expressed on the Thursday 8 o'clock buzz do not necessarily represent the opinions of the Warp Paid staff, our board of directors, or our millions of volunteers. The Thursday 8 o'clock buzz is for entertainment purposes only.
So there. All right. We're all covered legally, everyone. Stay tuned. In a minute, we're going to be speaking with Jesse Pica-Holst.
Let's do it.
All right. Let's do something. We're listening to some Ayerto there, Back Streets of Havana from the other side of this CD. Joining me in the studio, I'm very pleased to have, it's Columbus, Wisconsin Day, I guess. Jesse Pica-Holst is a, he's a a local activist here in the Madison area and also up in the Columbus area. He's also a realtor, and he also, one of his big things is he likes to preserve historical properties. So, good morning, Jesse.
Hey, thanks for having me on.
All right. Well, you told me the other day about all this controversy up there in Columbus. Yeah, Wisconsin had nothing to do with water.
No,
but who knows? Not yet.
Not yet.
Well, what's going on up there that we need to know about?
Yeah, so this all started back in, February of last year. I had some clients that were trying to buy a property from an estate. This little farmette, about 7.5 acres. This old, gorgeous 1860 cream city brick Italianate home. Beautiful. Right on the promenade coming into town, right? So it's right on the front doorstep of the city. And these two big, beautiful old barns in a state of disrepair, but quite savable. And the architecture about them is fascinating. So my clients wanted to renovate the whole property and turn the barn into like an event space, you know, wedding barn, that kind of thing. And made an offer into the estate. This property had been on the market for almost 2 years. We were told we were not in competition at all by the realtor or the listing agent for the estate. And then the city swooped in and bought it out from underneath us for about $1,000 more than our offer, suspiciously enough, which, you know, there's plausible deniability in our industry a lot of times, right? It's conceivable they made an offer and that the estate countered back at just $1,000 more. However, we were told, you know, realtors, actually, it's a term of our state real estate license. We are literally legally forbidden from lying. So we were explicitly told we were not in any kind of... Well, the listing agent told us explicitly that we were not in competition. Now...
Okay, that's lie number one.
That's the beginning of all this, right? And she's got a perverse incentive to do that because then if you understand the way that commission splits work, and I know there's a lot of controversy about this federally right now, but Wisconsin is actually one of the, you know, it's a state-by-state legal patchwork, right? And we've got actually one of the best legal frameworks in the country, and it makes sense for, in a lot of ways, for the selling agent to split their commission with the buyer's agent. It makes buyers not have to pay out of pocket, and everyone gets representation. That's important, right? But in this case, when the listing agent had a municipality waiting in the wings to buy this, she had a perverse incentive to sell to them because then she gets double the commission. Right. And so... That's at least what we think that what was maybe going on behind the scenes.
But I mean, you should have known that the city was interested in that property.
We
before
did not. Not
no. And isn't it kind of weird that the city would?
Well,
they know they got a buyer for a property, and they just say, "Oh, we're going to buy it instead." I mean, doesn't the city have more rights than you, an individual, in terms of like they're obviously buying this property for the good of the community, right?
Well, there's a housing shortage everywhere. And, you know, their position was, we need to buy this. It's on the main drag here coming into town, and no one's doing anything else with this farm. You know, it's been carved up for developments in the past. However, the way they went about it was very underhanded, it seems. There was a lot of decisions made, you know, behind closed doors without any public input whatsoever.
Is that legal?
Yeah, it's legal, but I don't know that it's, you know, the way of making good public policy.
Mm-hmm.
There are other questions about legality potentially, though, because they used federal COVID relief money, the ARPA money, in order to make the purchase in the first place. Now, originally... you know, we've poured over all the federal code into this and all the regulations, and it is earmarked. You can use this money to purchase properties to promote affordable housing. Those aren't just nice words, though. That carries a meaning to it. And,
right.
And the best that we could tell, digging through all the federal code, is you know, you have to be a qualifier in order to be using this federal COVID relief money. A development would have to be affordable to somebody that qualifies for the federal homes program. And basically, seeing that these, either whether they be tenants or home buyers, that they're not making more than 80% of the county median income.
Okay.
And it seems like after we explained this to members of the city council who are making these decisions, that they thought affordable housing is just some fancy nice words, right? Like, oh, they'll just be starter houses or something like that is what one alder told me. And I was like, that's not what any of that means. But okay.
Well, I mean, couldn't it mean, though, that? I mean, you could... Well, affordable housing, again, that's not low-income housing. There's a difference here that we're talking about, right?
Well, yeah. So it means...
Well, it means that you can't build, like, market-rate housing. Is that what you're saying?
That's what I'm saying.
Okay, affordable and housing the city of Columbus appears that they bought this, and they have no intention of using the funds right, and that is...
Right.
By building affordable housing, they're going to put market-rate housing there. Has the city looked at an opportunity for this? I mean, the city's actually going to be the developer of this property?
No, they're going to sell it to a developer. In fact, that's what they've just recently moved forward. Well, gosh, you know, how much time do you have to even talk about this? So
we got 8 more minutes. But
yeah, okay. So I'll try to boil it down. So the city citizenry of the town of Columbus got really up in arms because they're like, hey, look, the city has already made some questionable land purchases and is mismanaging their real estate portfolio as is, right?
Not to mention, it appears somebody lied.
Well,
a realtor lied.
Sure. And this whole project was the brainchild of a guy who was on the city. He was the president of the city council at the time. He was running for mayor, Alder Ian Gray. And he told the press in an article about a year ago at this time when it first came out, they first voted to purchase the land. He told the press that they had no specific plans for it. Well, you know, a year later, we've already filed now our third open records request, and we know that he was talking to developers the whole time. So
really?
He wasn't being forward with the press or the community.
That sounds
writ large.
That sounds kind of like a lie also.
Yeah, a little bit.
So there's lies here going on in Columbus. So what is going on, though, now? You guys had recent elections, right?
Yes.
And can you talk about the election?
Yeah.
This is,
so
yeah, it's been very political here.
Yeah.
Like
so
Columbus.
So in Columbus, there's 6 alders. There's 2 alders per each of the 3 districts, right?
Okay.
And then they alternate on 2-year terms who was up for re-election. Before last year's election, the council was 5-1 in favor of purchasing this land and developing it. Then there's a citizen uproar. Then 2 of the seats flipped right away. And just the other day, we believe that the incoming alders haven't said specifically they're overtly going to support our plan for this, but they heavily recognize and campaigned on this whole process stinks. We need transparency in government. This is a not an appropriate use of taxpayer funds.
So the train has not left the station yet on this issue, which is interesting because I thought
that
it was a done deal the way you explained it to me the other day.
I
just heard it wrong. It's not a done deal. And you guys are fighting against it, and it looks like you guys actually might have a chance of overturning the city's decision. Would it automatically go back to you guys? And it would be
the city put out what's called an RFP, a request for proposals, back in last spring. We were the only proposal submitted. We supplied every detail they wanted. The city said, even our opponents on the council said, hey, you know what? We can support you if you hire an attorney and put together a formal developer's agreement. Well, my clients did that. Spent about $12,000 doing so. And then at the last minute, the city attorney had his thumb on the scale too. The mayor who campaigned on selling the land to us, stuck the knife in our back the 11th hour in November. And then they quickly put out a new RFP that was tailored to make it sound like you guys maybe just shouldn't apply at all.
Oh, man.
Yeah.
Interesting. Eli, what'd you come up with over there? Did you read anything about it in today's State Journal about what's going on in Columbus? Because I didn't find anything in the New York Times about it.
I was thumbing through the paper. It doesn't seem like definitely didn't make the front page or the second page. So I think we're doing good news.
Yeah, I haven't heard too much on this one.
Yeah. So the local paper is giving us some good coverage. But
in Columbus.
In Columbus,
right,
yeah.
That's good. Good for local papers. All right. So how's this going to work out?
So what we're doing now is we even did have the city attorney cop to it at a meeting a couple meetings ago where he said, yeah, the new council could overturn this decision to sell to this other developer for $1. And this developer, it's Josh Lamp and Lamp's Landing. He's currently involved in some other imbroglio in DeForest, where there's a development that had a lot of issues that it was built just a couple of years ago. There was a lot of code violations. The city inspector didn't do their proper job. So people are like wondering if they're going to have their occupancy permits pulled. And Josh Lamp was the listing agent. I've spoken with people that have lived in this development too. And some of them said to me that he had told them that, you know, he was a partner of sorts with the developer too. So, you know, there's a lot of questions about what's the quality of building of work that's going to go in here. What did the city of Columbus just vote for? They spent over $500,000 buying this property, and they agreed to sell it for this developer for $1. They've been telling us for much of the last year, because they haven't done their homework, that our proposed use would be a violation of using this federal COVID relief money. And then at the last city council meeting where they were discussing this issue, the new city administrator had said, well, I actually did some actual homework into it, and anything under $10 million a municipality can spend with no restrictions. So we've been told repeatedly by the people on the city council who didn't want to see our vision or the citizenry support for us, which
are the citizens is there a movement there? Does it appear that you're getting some, if not all, or most of the citizens?
You can't drive in a single neighborhood in Columbus without seeing one of our yard signs. I've talked.
What do they say?
The savedingy.org.
Dingy. Cycle. That's the name of the property. That's too. Dingy property.
Sure. All right. Right. That's the family that lived on this property since the 70s. And then matriarch had passed away a couple of years ago.
Oh, wow.
Lois Dingy. So that's why it's, you know, the...
So we should be hearing more about this now that it broke here on the Thursday 8 o'clock buzz, because that's where all the news breaks here.
Yeah, we're big time
So now. Where's this going now? What do you guys see? Now, you think that you got some more support, and you kind of flipped the city council, the six people on there. As I was counting, I think you got 4-2 now.
Yeah, we have at least 4-2 and maybe 5-1.
Oh, geez.
So
it's a done deal. You guys are gonna win.
I hope so. We'll see if the incoming council members have the intestinal fortitude to undo a previous vote, which they certainly have the legal right and power to do so. We'll see. But, you know, I've talked to hundreds of people in this community over the last year, and it is across the political spectrum. I've seen this community come together, liberals, conservatives, independents, everyone in between, and they can't understand why the city is doing this, why they're making these decisions in the dark. That's another thing here is that all these decisions are happening behind closed doors in closed session. And they hide behind the idea that, hey, there's contractual details that we need to keep confidential, but they're also hiding their rationale and reasoning for making these decisions, and that's just highly inappropriate.
And what is a Columbus newspaper, by the way?
I believe
probably get it online now.
I mean,
too,
it's
just
a
like
Daily
County
Citizen, I think, but if you go to whisknews.com and search Dingy, D-I-N-G-E-E, you'll find some
More
articles
of this.
There.
Okay.
But if you go to our website, savedingy.org, you'll have a host of information there, the background, the historical facts about the farm itself, and then some of our open records requests, email dumps, things that we got, you know, alders talking to each other, talking to developers when they're saying that, you know, no one should be talking to anybody.
Okay. Wow.
Yeah.
There's a lot going on in Columbus. We have to talk to your friend Ben when he comes on here, too, see what he knows
all
about
the, all
that.
The dirty laundry. Yeah.
This guy's from, you know, we got a guy from Columbus coming on.
I heard
on
that.
Yeah. So he's a comedian, too.
Did you hear about the clean water?
Oh, I did hear about that, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. How's it taste?
Like water.
Pretty wet.
Yeah.
All right. Hey, well, Jesse, thanks a lot for,
thanks for having me.
This is an interesting story, and I'm sure the Ward News Department will get on this.
Yeah, it started out as historic preservation, and now it's about transparency in government and watching a citizenry come up and say, hey, you know what? I've never been interested in local politics, and now I know I have to be. So it's really kind of cool to see this community kind of awaken.
Excellent. Good job, man.
Yeah.
All right. Take care and keep me posted.
Will do. Thanks.
All right. In a minute, Glenn Silber, everybody. It's 8:29. It's 8:31. You are tuning into WORT 89.9 FM in Madison, Wisconsin, your listener-sponsored community radio station. Of course, Ibrahim Ferrer right there, Buenos Hermanos, from that great album. Well, next week, there's a program going on. It's called Waging Peace Mini Film Festival, Waging Peace in Vietnam. U.S. soldiers and veterans who oppose the war exhibit and programs promoting healing and reconciliation. It's actually April 1st to the 22nd at the Wisconsin Historical Society on the University Library Mall. And along with that program is, like I said, the Waging Peace Mini Film Festival. And they're going to be showing a series of films starting next Tuesday, April 9th, with the, I guess we could say, legendary, the epic documentary The War at Home, which chronicles the anti-war movement during the Vietnam War here, right here in Madison, Wisconsin, on our campus. And again, there's another film the next day, Sir No Sir, with director David Zeiger and Judy Kurofsky. That's 7 p.m. Wednesday, April 10th. The Whistleblower of My Lai. And that's going to be Sunday, April 14th. And then Hunting in Wartime with director Samantha Farinella. And that's going to be Sunday in the afternoon. Well, actually, Sunday, April 21st. So you can go online to check all of that out, and we'll mention the sponsors later on. But right now, I'm very pleased to have the filmmaker of The War at Home and a friend, Glenn Silber. Glenn, good morning. Sorry for that long introduction there.
That's okay. You got it right.
All right. Well, your film is coming back now. It's 45 years now, right? That this film came out.
It's hard to believe, but it's true. I believe it was the night of October 21st, 1979.
Wow.
We sort of, the way we dropped our own bomb in Madison when we released that film, and it was like the city went crazy. It was our history over the past 10 years, and we put it together in a way that I don't think people really expected it to reveal what we did. And we were very proud. I was very young, in my 20s. I made it with Barry Alexander Brown, who went on to do great things with Spike Lee. And, you know, I don't think we ever imagined the impact it would have.
That's what I want to. One of the first questions I had for you is like, okay, when you were making this film, what were you thinking? What was your motivation? You say, hey, this is an important story that needs to be told, or I want to do this for entertainment purposes, or what?
No, I came to Madison in the fall of '68 as a freshman, very naive, from out of state in New Jersey. I knew nothing about anything politically. And I was never, for the next 4 years, as the war raged in Vietnam, you know, by the time I got to Madison, there was already well over 500,000 U.S. troops in country. And I knew next to nothing. And so being in Madison, I always said my biggest education was just being in that environment. And as the war continued, I think a lot of people thought if things were going so badly, the war would just be over. But it wasn't. You know, first Johnson was there, and he, you know, had to resign. It was going so badly, and then Nixon took over, and with Henry Kissinger, I mean, it was just really. I learned that the war in Vietnam, they called the American War in Vietnam, and it was torturous for people that were of our generation, that were seeing so many people coming back in body bags, and at the same time, literally millions of Vietnamese being killed. So, my motivation was. By the time the war ended, after the U.S. had dropped literally 7.5 million tons of bombs on that country to try to force it to give up, that was more bombs that were dropped than in all of World War II by the U.S. and the Korean War. And somehow the Vietnamese people hung on and were fighting for their own independence. And in America, we had spent... When it was over and I thought of all the demonstrations I had gone to in Madison, I thought of how that experience had been replicated around the country hundreds and hundreds of times. And, you know, the war was ended officially by the peace agreement in 73, but in 75, the Vietnamese, the North Vietnamese rolled into Saigon and the war was really over. And for a lot of us who, you know, just been part of this massive anti-war movement, kind of on one hand, you could breathe a sigh of relief. But on the other hand, as a young filmmaker, I really was concerned that, you know, if I didn't do what I wanted to do and memorialize this effort in a powerful narrative using Madison really as a microcosm for what happened, I was afraid people would sort of start to forget. And this was too important to forget. So as a young guy, started out really in my early to mid-20s, and by the time it was over, I was 29. But we didn't know how people were going to respond to the film when we opened it that night. We really didn't have a clue.
During the time of while you were here during these anti-war protests, while the war was still going on, did you start to have a little seed in your mind that hey, I wanna record this, or I should maybe tape some people? Did you do any filming, or did you take photos or anything?
Not really. I was already moving into being a photography student and a film student. But kind of, to be honest with you, what really kind of made me think the hardest is after the tragedy happened in Madison with the bombing of the Army Math Research Center, and then after Carl Armstrong was captured and brought back, it really was kind of a personal confrontation in my own mind. The war was still going on at that point. Over there, certainly. And the way they handled Carl's quote-unquote trial, he put the war on trial and brought people in from all over the country to testify about what would motivate someone to take such a radical action. And the more I thought about it, it was like a microcosm of what had happened nationally. Mm-hmm. And it wasn't just local activists who testified, but... You know, I started filming then. I was working with the Defense Committee. I had a video group I was working with called People's Video. And when a lot of these activists, or not just activists, there were B-52 bombers who came in who had renounced the war. There was a guy named Bart Arsborn who was with the CIA who has been part of executing the Phoenix program that killed tens of thousands of village leaders. And they were all testifying at this, you know, mitigation hearing, really, sentencing hearing. And that's when I really started feeling like, you know, we're putting Carl on trial for doing something that I know he now regrets by putting one bomb in a building, calling in a warning that was not heeded. And then you compare that to the 7.6 million tons of bombs we dropped on that peasant population. And you can understand how the war really drove people to such extreme degrees.
Mm-hmm.
And I was still young. I was 23 when, you know, I graduated in 72. I was 22, and I started thinking about, what do I want to do with my career? Everyone else in my family was a lawyer. I didn't want to do that. And I started thinking, maybe this is something I could do that if we could pull it off, which was kind of a radical thought in itself, maybe if we could pull off this film, we'd have a lasting document to always be there to remind people what the war was about and what we lived through here in Madison. And I'm really proud to say here it is almost 45 years later, and the film plays better than ever.
Well, that's another thing. I said, what is the relevancy to these times of the war at home? I'm speaking with Glenn Silber, of course, the filmmaker and producer of the documentary film The War at Home, which documents the anti-war movement here in Madison against the Vietnam War. Way back in the day, 45, well, more than 45 years ago, 50-something years ago. How does this movie resonate now? How, you know, what you have been showing it around. I know you did a big tour during the 40th anniversary around the country. Is it just, old people like us who attend, or what about the new generation of people that this movie might benefit?
Let me answer that two-part question. The first part, I think, is really the most important, but it's what is the relevance of the film and how did we come to do it? You mentioned it's true. 4 or 5 years ago, you got to go back to after Trump was elected, and immediately there were these women's marches all over the country,
mm-hmm.
and you really see the beginning of a political resistance movement starting. So I went to the march in my town, and I was thinking, well, okay, I'm not a woman. What's my role in all this? And I started thinking about it, and I said, you know, when you boil it down, The War at Home is really a documentary that shows how a political resistance movement was built against the war in Vietnam. And by most people's standards, I think they would say it was largely successful. It forced two presidents from office, and eventually, finally, the war came to a grinding halt. And so I thought, well, okay, the problem at that point was, you know, the film wasn't in the digital format where I could even really show it. They weren't showing 16 or 35 millimeter films anymore.
Mm-hmm.
So I decided, you know, we this film is too important. It's been playing for, you know, many years already successfully. And so we made a decision, my partner Barry Brown and I, he was the co-director of the film, we made a decision to raise the money largely through Wisconsin sources to restore the 16 mm-hmm. millimeter film to a 4K digital cinema package. And we also put out a new beautiful DVD on the 40th anniversary. So the relevance to me is at that moment, it was to kind of show people that yes, you can, against the odds, as citizens, build a citizen movement like the civil rights movement did before us, and you can be successful. And so that's why the film is so inspiring, I think, to people. And you see regular people, largely people that were students at the time, but not only those. There were businessmen, there were community leaders, there was housewives that you see in the film.
Mm-hmm.
And so I just felt that preservation project would be there for history. And, you know, my entire archive is in the State Historical Society, so it seems appropriate that that's where we're having this great new screening on Tuesday night at 7. But to answer your other question, it is frustrating because today it's hard to get the film in front of the current generation who really needs to see it. I wish someone would give us a grant to just take the film around the college campuses because mm-hmm. there's some things going on now. But, you know, you're still seeing activists on campuses. I mean, maybe it's not what it was back then, but I think the times have changed. And so, and the technological thing, most people watch, let's say, the media now on home, on streaming or something. But we still like seeing the film in the theater. It has a bit, much bigger impact, and that's why I'm proud to be bringing it there. This might be one of the last really big screenings in Madison. So, I mean, we were there, as you pointed out, for the 40th anniversary. We had a wonderful event at the Orpheum Theater, and that was fantastic. Mm-hmm. We did a panel afterwards called The War at Home Then and Now. And there's going to be a panel with Paul Soglin moderating this. And also the other film that you have to mention is David Ziegler's great documentary, Sir, No Sir, which is about the hidden anti-war movement, which was the GIs over there and the Vietnam vets who were already back home. I saw that film 10 or 15 years ago at a film festival, and I was totally blown away by it. I felt like this is the hidden anti-war movement on top of what we were doing here that most people don't even know about.
Speaking of what we were doing here, of course, you're going to have our former mayor and also a big participant in the anti-war movement. Paul Soglin is going to be moderating this. What about some of the other people that are featured in the movie? Have you kept in touch with them? Do people still have that that desire and that desire to question what's going on with our government and our foreign policy and things like that?
Of course, I am in touch with a few people, including Carl Armstrong. One of the leaders of the anti-war movement, I think, just passed away last week, Evan Stark. He plays an incredible role in the film. And when we went around a few years ago with the film, when I was out west in Berkeley and in San Francisco showing it for a week, Daniel Ellsberg came on stage with me to do the Q&A afterwards. And a number of the Madison people that were in the film, like Susan Coulson and others, came, and it was really great. I just think that right now, you know, we're facing a different time, and it's hard to compare then and now. Mm-hmm. I think what you just touched on, though, I have to say, is we fought against the war in Vietnam, and I think the government has not learned its lesson. I consider what they did in Iraq to be a massive war crime,
right,
entirely built around a lie. We talk about the big lie today. Well, that was built on the biggest lie and has destabilized the Mideast probably forever. And, you know, it's heartbreaking as someone who came up with a generation that thought we were bringing peace and love and really a whole new approach to living in this country. But, you know, it is what it is. So I think there's millions of us still in my age group, baby boomers, who were involved. And that was, again, one of the reasons for making the film. But really, that was almost in some ways the biggest reason. I felt coming out of that Vietnam period that there have been millions and millions of people mm-hmm. who have gotten in the anti-war movement.
Now, students watching that and people that are activists on campus, young student activists, might be a little bit shocked, maybe, to see the extent of the political activity and militant activity that went on campuses. Now, as we all know, a lot of U.S. campuses are I don't want to say they're fighting back, but there's been kind of a silencing, if you will, of political activism on campus. There's like, oh, we got to have both sides, and they're under attack by the government, by the Congress, by Republicans, that all these campuses are left-leaning seeds or planting the seeds of leftist radicalism, and we can't have that kind of protest on campus. What about that? Is this a movement that could happen on campuses these days? Do you think?
You have to remember going back, and we don't have this part. Our film starts, but the free speech movement that was going on in Berkeley, like the civil rights movement, although it was free speech movement was based in one campus, they were protesting. Thousands of students for a year were protesting with civil disobedience against the campus, who was trying to ban on-campus political activities, and even banned the students' right of free speech. That's mm-hmm. where the thing came from. And, you know, it was coming out of the Cold War. There was all this paranoia about communism, which was incredibly stupid. And basically, that was one of the seeds that kicked off. And so, yeah, I think we have cycles, you know. Mm-hmm. We have the cycles in the 30s and early 40s. We had, you know, the New Deal that was very liberal. And after the war, we got into this horrific McCarthy period that I also did a film about Joe McCarthy in Wisconsin. And then we got back to the 60s, and all of a sudden, you know, some of those big trends, there was a confluence of this younger generation born after the war with this terrible, incredible war in Vietnam that we were learning about very, very quickly, thanks to teach-ins and some of the techniques you see in the film. So I think, you know, it took 7 years to really build a successful movement. And I think right now you're seeing, in a way, a little bit of a rebirth of that on campus. Now, of course, the whole Israeli-Palestinian conflict is horrific. And, you know, as someone who was born Jewish, I'm thoroughly disgusted by their policies. But, you know, I just think that the movements are often a reflection of their times. They really are.
Right.
And so right now we've been living through what is probably still, on balance, a really reasonably good, successful economy. And people have had it good with all kinds of technological things, from their phones to streaming to you name it, a lot of distractions. But once, and eventually, I think, unfortunately, the clock, the pendulum may swing back, that's when young people facing inability to go to college or unable to pay the rent or whatever, that's what begins the seeds of protest once again. And I think young people are always going to be the most idealistic. They need to be. Right now, the big battle is climate change. Right again, of course, our generation has screwed the goose, and we're now desperately fighting to save the world. Mm-hmm. And so, of course, there's the nuclear policy, which is really in dire right. situation right now.
Well, so Glenn,
there's never a shortage of things to protest. We just, the main key thing is to get organized.
Right. And I, with that, I want to, first of all, thank you very much for being on the show again. Glenn Silber, his film, The War at Home, is going to be showing next Tuesday, April 9th at 7 p.m. This is sponsored by the Wisconsin Historical Society, the Harvey Goldberg Center, a bunch of other groups, including the Progressive Cap Times, Haven Center, Madison Vets for Peace, amongst other groups. Waging Peace in Vietnam, U.S. Soldiers and Veterans Who Oppose the War. It's a mini film festival. They've got just about once a week for the next couple of weeks. You can check out these films. You can go to WagingPeaceInVietnam.com if you want more information on this whole thing. Glenn, I want to thank you
Tony,
so much.
It's it's a free screening. I'm told there will be some kind of refreshments being served.
Yes.
I think it's going to be a really hot screening. I've never been in this society, but I'm told a couple hundred people. So those of you who will be there, be around afterwards.
All right.
I think it's going to be a hot screening. Thanks for having me, Tony. Look forward to seeing you there.
Okay, thank you very much. Glenn Silber. It's 8:52. Did you hear what he was saying about the youth over there, Eli?
What are we doing?
He was talking to you guys.
I don't know if you know this, Tony. I'm not the youth anymore.
Man. Oh, yeah, you're so old.
I just found out in this last election that I'm not considered a young voter anymore.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow. I'm an old. What a change.
I'm an adult
what
man.
What a change. I'm a grown man. All right, hey, speaking of grown men, we got one that we're going to talk to in just a minute.
Heck yeah.
We're going to talk about Columbus.
Well, a child here.
We don't even need a musical interlude. What the heck? How's it going, Ben?
Oh, it's going great.
Great
to see you, Tony.
Man, how's it going, man? I mean, everything's cool.
Oh, it's good. Aside from the snow outside, it's real good.
All right. You get the weather, too. We don't even need to call the captain.
Oh, man. I don't think we're going to have time to call the captain. You're going to have to do the weather for him. But you got a big show coming up. Let's talk about it. Tell us what you got going down.
Yeah, for sure. Don't Tell Comedy is returning to Madison. I think a lot of folks maybe have seen it on Instagram, Don't Tell Comedy shows. Tony, have you seen it?
No, I'm not hip. I'm not hip.
Okay.
But I would like to see it. It sounds. What is it?
So the premise of the show is it is secret shows at secret locations. So we don't you buy tickets and then we don't tell you where it's at and we don't tell you who's on it until the day of. So you get an email the day of after you've purchased the ticket and it tells you exactly where to go. And then you just find out who's on
it. And it's all in Madison, right? It's not like one here and one in Columbus, Wisconsin.
So there are chapters actually all across the country and then other countries too.
So make sure you go to the right site.
Make sure you don't go to Paris, France.
Okay.
Don't tell.
All right. And that's a cool concept, but what else?
So you came on here, Ben, to tell me to talk about your new show.
And yeah,
so
we
my big questions when anybody's talking about a show is where's it at?
I can't tell you that.
Okay. So no information there.
What about what time is it? Can you tell us that?
I can. It is at 8 p.m. this Friday.
All right. Should we like guess where it's going to be? No, we won't do that. Go ahead.
It's at the Cardinal Bar, I think, probably. That's where we sneak all the shows in. No, so I my next question is, who is on it?
I can't tell you that either.
Oh. Okay, so what are we talking about here, Ben?
Well, yeah. I have real bad news. It's sold out, so you can't even buy tickets.
All right, man. It was nice talking to you. We'll see you later. We're going to call the captain and get some real weather.
Well, I will say,
is
Tony,
it sold out for real?
It is sold out, but there
that's
is an...
That's good. You come down here and tell all the people, and they're all excited about it. Now it's like, you can't go.
Well, I do have two things to share.
Not only can you not talk about it, you also can't attend. It's the most exclusive show in the city.
It really is.
This is the best interview I've ever done.
Well, I tell you what, folks can still subscribe to our email list, which if they look up Don't
Why?
Tell Madison on... Well, Tony, there will be so many future shows.
So this is a teaser for the next time you do this.
It is. I want people to know Don't Tell is coming back to Madison. And then, honestly, after it sold out, I just thought this would be a good moment to plug my new upcoming book.
Okay.
All right, perfect.
Yeah. Except you can't tell us about it.
Well, this one I can.
Okay, so you can tell us.
You actually wrote a book?
Yeah, would you like to hear the title?
No.
Well, I'll probably tell you anyways.
Tell me. Yeah.
The title of the book is
Don't Swear.
Love, 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 Love Blooms. And would you like to hear an excerpt of the book?
No, but go ahead anyhow.
Well, this is from our first chapter. John walked into the kitchen. It was real bright, brighter than an LED light. He turned to his wife Jennifer and said, "I no longer wish to get divorced." "Oh, good," Jennifer said. "What made you change your mind?" John looked up. A tear rolled down his face. As he made unwavering eye contact with her, he said, "When you bought us tickets to see Don't Tell Comedy in Madison and subscribed to their mailing list, I realized I still love you." Well, it was that and all the stuff you did for the Russians.
I told you I didn't want to hear that.
But that is chapter one.
That sounds really good, man.
Yeah, I didn't know you were a writer, Ben.
Yeah, really.
A lot of people are calling it the next Hunger Games.
Oh, and it might have to be if you... I heard you're doing a little Hunger Games-style competition in order to get tickets to the show. You know, you I guess if you want to...
Well,
get
I couldn't wait, tell you that.
Well, yeah, you can. What's going on now?
Oh, you know,
you can win tickets. You got to kill somebody.
You do have to kill somebody with a bow and arrow, is what I've been told.
I cannot say. This falls under the I cannot tell category.
I am looking at the words we can't say on the radio, and the phrase "kill someone with a bow and arrow" is on there. So that's
no,
that was just added. Charlie just put it on there. Seven words.
Should we go back and read more of my book?
No, I'd rather look at the pictures, but I can't see them. Okay. Well, what's your name again, Mr. Everybody? I mean, they know he's Ben.
I am Ben O'Connell. Yeah. Nobody needs to know me, but they just truly need to know Don't Tell is coming back to Madison for a lot of shows.
And
in
when
the future.
Is it? Can you tell us what day it is, though?
I can't tell you the date of future shows, but if you subscribe to our mailing list,
already,
you will see
so what is the... People don't know the date either, so you gotta just be...
So you know the date when you're buying tickets.
Oh,
so everybody knows that the show is this Friday that has bought tickets.
Okay, good. So they're okay.
And yeah, so they'll get an email the day of telling them exactly where to go.
It's
in cool venues, whether, you know, it's unconventional comedy venues, whether it's a restaurant, a tattoo parlor,
a Chuck E. Cheese.
It could be at a Chuck E. Cheese.
Really?
I couldn't tell you that.
Okay, well, sounds very interesting. And people, how do they find out about the next one? What site do they go to?
If they essentially look up Don't Tell Madison online, it'll take them right to our website.
What about the openness of the Columbus City Council in terms of, this whole big purchase for this property that people are trying to preserve? The Dingy Farm, what about that? What's your thoughts on that?
So don't really have any thoughts on the procedure of the council, but I will say that farm has just been sitting in the middle of town for a real long time, and the amount of signs trying to save it are tremendous in Columbus. There are so many of them. If you drive down Main Street, you'll see at least 20.
All right, Ben O'Connell, thanks a lot. I hope to see you soon performing around town when it's not such a secret. But
yeah, thank you. Great to be on.
All right, Eli.
You know where you can see comedy?
Where?
At the Cardinal Bar.
Tonight at 6:30.
At 6:30. Isn't that
right.
Fun when you can?
Eli,
I can
Wills,
tell you who will be on the show. It'll
show.
Be me.
All right, cool. All right, well, good. Thanks a lot, and thanks for coming down. I also want to thank Glenn Silber and also Jesse Pica Holst. Everybody, pay attention to what's going on in Columbus, Wisconsin. It means a lot.
And drink the water.
And stay tuned for... this music's not playing, man. Let's try this one. Okay. Yeah.
Hey, good show, Tony.
Yeah. Stay tuned for Hajira. This is WRT 89.9 FM in Madison, Wisconsin.
This is the Insurgent Radio Kiosk for Thursday, April 4th.
This is Common Places. I'm Diego Alegría. Esto es Lugares Comunes. Mi nombre es Diego Alegría. We use metaphors to live by. Usamos metáforas para vivir. Some have become commonplaces. Algunas se han vuelto lugares comunes. Today's metaphor is... La metáfora de hoy es... Language is a conduit. El lenguaje es un canal. Difícil es alcanzar o hacer llegar. It's hard to get across or to come through.